In a world premiere, two-time Tony Award winner James Naughton takes the Berkshire Theatre Group's Fitzpatrick main stage as Gabe in a one-man comedy, a raw and witty exploration of an estranged father-son relationship. Cedars is directed by Naughton's daughter, Kira Naughton, who is a longtime BTG artist. In Cedars, Gabe, a 50-ish defense lawyer, finds himself on the more unfortunate side of life, and now by his father's bedside at Cedars Hospital. James Naughton is a Tony winner for performances in City of Angels and Chicago. He rose to fame on stage and went on to star in such films as The Paper Chase, The First Wives Club, and The Devil Wears Prada, just to name a few. Eric Tarloff has written extensively for the screen, both large and small. His list of credits include almost 100 sitcoms, including episodes of MASH, All in the Family, The Bob Newhart Show, The Jeffersons, Alice, Room 222, House Calls, which I think may be one of the most underrated shows on television, is a great pleasure to welcome James Naughton and Eric Tarloff to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. What an honor to have you both here.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Likewise.
Thank you so much for being here. So, Jim, you've been working with this work for a little while, right? You've done some readings of it and...
Eric called me about three or four years ago. We've been friends. We don't see each other a lot because we live on opposite sides of the country. But he called me and he said, "I've written this one-man play, and I've kind of always heard your voice. Would you read it?" And I said, "Sure." So he sent it to me, and I read it. And I thought it was an extraordinary piece of writing. And I called him and told him that. And I said, "Would you like to hear it?" And he said, "That's what I'd love." So he and his wife, Laura, flew in from California. They live in Berkeley. And we did a reading of it, and I said, "You know, it's long." He said, "It ought to be about 90 minutes, right?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "It's long." He said, "What do you think, a couple hours?" And I said, "I don't know. We'll find out." It was 3 hours long.
Wow. I actually offered to do only half at that first reading, and Jim, to his credit, said, "No, we're going to do this. We might as well do the whole
thing. Let's go through it." Sure.
Yeah.
So we had a little post-mortem, and he said, "I think I can cut this down." And he went to work, and about 6 months later, he sent me a thing, and it was 2 hours long. And we did another reading. Then he did it again, and he got it down to it's under 90 minutes now. Yeah. But it's very, very, very intense is what it is. It's funny. Thank God it's funny because it's also very dark.
Yes, it's true. You refer to it as a comedy, and I know some of the PR material from the festival suggests right. that. And I don't think of it as a comedy at all. At one point in rehearsal, I called it a tragedy with laughs, and yeah. I think that's probably a more accurate description.
Well, and in that way, the comedy is described as the greatest truth, right? I mean, it is.
It comes out of a very black place in the case of this particular play, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. Gabe is rather down on his luck. He is sitting at the bedside of his father and talking.
His intubated comatose father, so the old man can't hear him. And what this does is, Eric has a pretty interesting take on what happens when you're talking to somebody who can't hear you. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, it's just, at first you may be guarded the way you would ordinarily be guarded in the social setting.
Right.
But over time, I think a kind of candor gets liberated because you begin to think, what difference does it make?
Right.
And your social self is stripped away and something far more fundamental starts coming out.
And it's as if you're in a room by yourself.
In a way, it's as if you're in a room by yourself. But the person you're angriest at happens to be lying there, provoking
and,
you.
And you do hope, and I think in some ways, that it permeates and you get your message across at a point.
I think you hope that, and you also hope that that's not the case at the same time.
Yes.
So that's part of what Gabe is confronting, I think.
So how did you come to this idea?
It's very hard to say where ideas come from.
Sure.
It didn't come from any obvious biographical place, but it's an idea I had, I would say, for 15 or 20 years before I wrote it. I always thought it was inherently dramatic, the idea that talking in a way to no one, but to the person who's maybe most important in your life, but knowing that they can't hear you or suspecting they can't, that you would start saying things that you've wanted to say for decades and haven't been able to. And I just thought there was such drama in that. And I don't know what kept me from starting it, but at some point I just did.
You've done this before, Jim, but to want to be on stage by yourself with a great script, And do that. I mean, that's a challenge, right?
Oh, it's wow! Is it a challenge? I handed this script to Kate McGuire last December or January. I just sent it to her, and she called me up and she said, "I want to do it. You want to do it?" And I went, "Oh my gosh!" because learning it is, and being able to do it actually is every night is something, it's quite a challenge. 90 minutes of intense, dark, thankfully, sometimes funny and very moving material. I started learning it the 1st of February. And that's 5 or 6 months ago. I'd get up in the morning, have a cup of coffee, and sit down in a chair for an hour or two and work on it. And now I'm doing it, and it's lickety-split. It's power-packed and very, very, very intense.
Where did your, of course, you all, both you and your daughter, have ties to the Berkshire Theater Group and to Kate McGuire for years. So at what point did your daughter come into the conversation of saying, okay, I want to direct this?
Well, Kate said to me, what do you want to do about a director? And I said, I don't think Eric and I want a director. We're afraid somebody might get in here and just sort of mess things up. We've both directed before and blah, blah, blah. Right. She said, oh, no, you're going to want somebody out there. And then she said, what about Kira? And Kira had directed a one act that Kate did last summer. And
with her and Kim Taylor.
And Kim Taylor. And so I said, well, that's really an interesting idea, because the last two or three times I've done anything on stage, the best notes I've gotten from anyone came from my daughter, from Kira. So I said, yeah, I think, that's a really good idea. So I said, why don't you ask her if she wants to do it? So Kate called her and said, you want to direct your father in this show? And she said, I saw that 3-hour reading, you know, a couple of years ago. She said, and I thought at the time, and she never told me this, but she said, I thought at the time, God, I would love to direct Dad in this play, because it requires a sort of vast inner rage that nobody else knows.
It's maybe really interesting. She knows that resides somewhere in Jim,
yeah,
and it's not visible to the rest of us.
Or to me, really.
Or even to Jim himself, but she was able to elicit it in the course of rehearsals.
Yeah.
And it's been a very interesting process to watch those rehearsals.
I would think that is, I mean, that's a bonus. You could never get that otherwise, in the sense of having someone who knows another individual so well to get that out of them,
yeah,
right? I mean, that's something that...
She was very, very good, very good. And, you know, it is wonderful to be able to work with someone with whom you have shorthand. You know, and an understanding, which, you know, somebody else coming in the door, if we hadn't worked together before or known each other, it would have taken...
Very interesting, because the play is about a parent-child
right.
relationship. And here it's really reversed in a way. The child is directing, is the boss of an interaction with her father. And I think those dynamics made for a very interesting rehearsal period.
Do you ever feel... As not being a Naughton, did you ever feel like suddenly, oh, okay, I'm watching this dynamic go on sort of from an outside?
Watching it, yes, but I never felt like anything but a participant.
Yes.
No,
because it's still your words.
It's not just that. Kira was very generous about letting me participate in the process. And in a sense, we all were collaborating. I mean, in the best sense, what should happen in the theater is what happened. So that almost every decision was a cooperative decision.
Yeah, that's true. I would have to say that's true.
And I mean, the first couple of times I had a note or a suggestion, I turned to Kira and said, is this all right? I don't want to be trespassing on your territory.
Right.
And she said, just say it. You don't have to ask permission. Just say it. And it was great. It was very freewheeling and very, it just felt very creative in the best sense.
James Naughton and Eric Tarloff join us this morning. Jim is starring in Cedars, directed by Kira Naughton and written by Eric Tarloff, which plays through August 9th at the Berkshire Theater Group's Fitzpatrick Main Stage in Stockbridge. Jim, when you're on stage, and so you just opened over the weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that bringing an audience in, that experience, is that different when it's just you on stage as opposed to an ensemble piece?
You mean being out there by yourself?
Yes.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, feeling the mood of the room, it would seem like you are sort of privy to everything.
Well, it is daunting because there's nobody to help you out. you're out there by yourself, and if you go up, as we call it in the theater, if you don't know where you are, if you lose track of the argument, you're kind of up the creek without a paddle. So there's a lot of pressure on. And that's interesting.
And I've set Jim, I have to say, some really difficult problems in terms of memorization, because there are a lot of digressions in this script.
Right.
The main character is trying to avoid coming up with certain things, and he will throw off all sorts of verbal pyrotechnics to avoid confronting where he's going,
yeah.
And then he finally has to. So things circle around, and he interrupts himself.
Yeah.
And to remember all that, and remember that there is a through line, what Leopold Mozart used to call il filo, there is a through line that you're following despite all these divagations. I think it must be very, very difficult.
It is. Eric can't write a straight line. Every line has like three or four handles and then a couple of digressions. And then to give you an example, I'll say something like, what kills me, one of the things that keeps me awake at night squirming, and frankly there are so many, it's like they're in a holding pattern, circling above my head, waiting for air traffic control to give them one by one clearance to land, comma, right? And he hasn't even gotten to the subject and the predicate yet.
I mean, I don't always write like that. It's character.
There's an awful lot of that.
But going back to what you said at the very beginning is that you always had him in mind for that. So in writing, was there an idea of, okay, well, he can handle
you
this.
You know, I've figured he can pretty much handle anything.
Yes, well, that's
but
true.
I didn't have the idea of Jim before I started writing. It's just as I was writing, I did hear his voice. And I suppose in some ways that may have had some impact on how I wrote it. But it didn't occur to me that he would actually be the one who would end up performing it. I mean, that was, thrilling. I didn't expect it. I would have hoped that's the best I could have managed.
Does it become emotional for you almost every night? I mean, do you feel it?
Yeah, it's interesting. For some reason, my kids have been amazed at it because the emotion is available to me somehow in this play and it hasn't always been. Over the course of my 45 years in the business, sometimes you're very dry when you don't want to be, but with this one, that's not the case. It has never been the case, and I don't have any explanation for it. But it I find it very moving at a point in the play where it should be moving to Gabe.
Do you come off the stage with an emotional exhaustion?
Well, it's this piece is so dense. And so high-powered and so emotional and funny and fast and energetic that it's you come off like that, you know, and you go, holy cow, what just happened? It's five scenes. It's five visits to the hospital to visit my father. And there's nothing about Gabe's experience that's really remotely much like my own. Or like Eric's.
Or like mine.
It's really fiction for both of us. But
The thing is, there's no, I don't think there's any relationship in the human family that's more fraught, no matter how loving, than father-son.
Yeah.
So it resonates even if there's nothing in it which is remotely similar to what you've lived through, I think. It still has that kind of impact. I mean...
Yeah, that's true.
I'd like to think so.
I ran into a woman yesterday. I went over to Jacob's Pillow on my day off, and a woman came up to me, and she said, I was there last night. She said, I'm a psychologist. What is it like for you to be playing this character? She says, it's got to cost you. It's got to be...
Right.
I mean, I thought that was kind of interesting. I said, wow, what an interesting question. I don't know yet. I don't have anything like any kind of... perspective on this experience.
When he checks into rehab, we'll have
right.
I said, but I'm really grateful for the day off.
Is it you started out, I read in the introduction just because I was fascinated, but of writing so much situation comedy work, of doing that, what, 22 minutes, you know, of writing those of
yeah.
those scripts, is that work that you enjoyed?
At the time, but I never thought it was going to be my career. I mean, it was great that somebody paid me to write. You know, when you're in your 20s, that's really thrilling. And it was fun. It was an interesting exercise. But it was never, I was always more interested in reading novels than in watching television. So in some ways, it always felt like a kind of sideshow, although a remunerative one and an enjoyable one.
But the list of shows that I mentioned are, and I'm sure there were other shows that wouldn't make that list.
Oh, man. Don't get me started. some of the worst shows in the history of television.
But the list.
I don't put those in the CV.
Sure. Yeah. But the list is pretty impressive.
I managed to write some of the best shows in the history of television, but I also managed to write some of the worst. And I just leave that off.
You also worked with some wonderful other guys that you liked a
Absolutely.
Lot. The Larry Gelbarts.
And Larry Gelbart was, I mean, a genius.
Right.
But also.
In MASH.
On MASH, yeah. And a number of other shows,
yes.
which are less
United,
heralded.
United States.
United States.
Oh, I love that show.
It was great. It really.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
It's, it deserves much more praise than it got. But I also, because of the timing, just my generation, I worked with some of the great writers from radio. I mean, with Milt Josephsberg and Mort Lachman. I mean, all these people who wrote for Jack Benny and Bob Hope and stuff. And I mean, it was an incredible education in the art of comedy. And these guys were so great. I mean, there was something paternal, and they were both paternal. It's interesting. They were, as fathers often are, both competitive and supportive at the same time. And it was just really an interesting experience to work with them.
And as Jim mentioned, the people you get to work with, but also Larry Gelbart being one, Norman Lear being another. Which,
Norman Lear was an old family friend, as a matter of fact. So
yeah.
He was more competitive than friendly, I guess. That's what that means.
I got to work with Larry Gelbart. We did. He wrote the book for City of Angels.
Oh, that's right.
Just one look, and you could tell Laura Villiers was a handful. Maybe two, if you played your cards right. She had a face you could hang a dream on, a body that made the Venus de Milo look all thumbs, and only the floor kept her legs from going on forever. Larry Gelbart.
Yeah. He was the best writer of comedy, and maybe one of the best writers I've certainly ever worked with, but maybe even known.
I have read his autobiography like 8 times. It's one of the most incredible things.
Yeah.
His work, his body of work is incredible.
He was. I mean, I've told Jim this. He had this genius where the line would come out spontaneously, immediately, requiring absolutely no revision or editing.
Right.
I mean, he would just say something that was...
And it worked.
It was like
pearl.
It was a pearl.
Yeah.
Pearl. Yeah.
You so then when you write something, so you get something like this, and you get free reign. Well, apparently initially it's 3 hours long. That's what we know about you. So, you work it down.
It is embarrassing to me that since I've worked in dramatic forms a lot in my life, that I so misjudge the length.
No,
I mean,
but
by
yeah,
a factor
yeah,
of two, is that's
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, but
that's all part of the process.
It
right?
takes a huge amount of talent to be able to edit yourself, and he was able to do that. That's extraordinary. A lot of guys can't do that.
And not lose anything in the process.
Oh,
oh we lost plenty.
but you still have a beautiful story.
Well, I hope
yeah.
so.
Yeah, it became denser and harder hitting and funnier and all the, you know, everything you want when you shrink something like that.
Well, Cedars, starring James Naughton, directed by Kira Naughton and written by Eric Tarloff, plays through August 9th at the Berkshire Theatre Group's Fitzpatrick Main Stage in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. You can find out more information by going to berkshiretheatregroup.com. berkshiretheatregroup.com, again, on the stage through August 9th. Jim and Eric, it is a great pleasure to have you both here. Thank you so much for being with us, and have a great rest of the run.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.